Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. Aloha, mahalo, spam sandwiches, poke bowls. Where do we start when you talk about Hawaiian food and also creating a workplace where people want to work? I think we're going to probably talk about all that stuff today on Startup Hustle. And before I introduce today's guest, today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult, and Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Now, as you are, you may or may not be aware, listeners, we are on our second episode of our Inc. 5000 series for folks that are here in my hometown of Kansas City. And we had a whole lot of great companies on the list in 2022, including my own. Now, that said, with me today, I've got Cameron McNee, and he is the co-founder and co-CEO of Hawaiian Bros Island Grill. Cameron, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thanks, Matt. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'd like to start our conversation with learning more about your backstory and including how some bros in Kansas City end up opening a Hawaiian restaurant here in the Midwest.
Yeah, it's a great story. It didn't start in Kansas City. The restaurant did, but we didn't. My brother and I grew up in Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, Nike Town, Track Town, USA, mm-hmm. Home of the Oregon Ducks. And that's where we grew up. And we got into the restaurant industry when we were pretty young. I was 20 and my brother was 16. My family had bought a small single location Hawaiian plate lunch restaurant in Oregon. It was kind of some random circumstances that led to that happening. But when we did that, we jumped in and we started working for the family business. And we did that for over the next decade. And so we got really familiar with the Hawaiian plate lunch and that genre of food. And then over time, my brother and I had big dreams for what we wanted to do, with this brand, and never really got the full opportunity to do that in the family business. And in around 2017, another set of brothers, also from Oregon, but they had moved to Kansas City, they had started a real estate investment company in Kansas City, and they had approached us and said, "Hey, there is no Hawaiian plate lunch. You know, we know that you guys want to do big things with this. You have a big vision. There's nothing really like that on a national scale. There's a lot of things that you've wanted to do over the last, 10 plus years that you haven't gotten to do. What do you guys think about coming out to Kansas City and starting, a Hawaiian plate lunch restaurant in Kansas City?" We had never been to the Midwest, never been to Kansas City, but we went and checked it out. And after a few months of deliberation, we ended up you know, making a deal with them and starting a four-way partnership, two sets of brothers. And we opened our first location in 2018. So that's kind of how we ended up in Kansas City. And it's kind of become, you know, our new home.
And that's interesting. Now, I've enjoyed food from your Overland Park restaurant, and had recently returned from a 11-day trip to Waikiki this summer, where I learned what the plate lunch even is. Like, I don't even not even sure in the Midwest if the term quote plate lunch is that well known. And you know, there's something about your story that I love, because why not? You got an opportunity to be pretty darn unique in this market pretty quickly. And, you know, it's like I said, I learned a lot about Hawaiian food. I mentioned the spam sandwich. Do you say spam musubi? Is that?
Yeah, spam musubi. It's a side item that we do serve. It's really popular in Hawaii, and we have our own kind of rendition on it. But yeah, it's popular. It's popular on the mainland. It's kind of that item in particular is kind of you're either all in or you're all out on it. We don't get a lot of people that kind of like it. It's either they love it or they hate it. And some people are freaked out because it's spam. We always tell people try it once, and a lot of people end up being surprised and really loving it.
Yeah, well, I was surprised when I visited Hawaii. I'm like, what the hell is this? Now, I'm adventurous, so I tried it, and I was like, hey, this is pretty good. You know, I never thought about that. Now, I mentioned, you know, a poke bowl, which is not on your menu, but that's another thing in Hawaii that's kind of like a really well-known thing. I'd never really heard of that term either. So as you're building this restaurant and scaling it, and you guys are up 900% over 3 years, so you're doing something right, obviously, but what made you decide what would go on the menu and what wouldn't when it came to like Hawaiian food?
Yeah, that's another great question. And, you know, we are mainly a plate lunch restaurant. I mean, like you said, we have the side dishes like the spam musubi, but we decided early on that, hey, we want to be a plate lunch restaurant. We can't be all things to all people, but what we want to do is do plate lunch really, really well. And for those that don't know, plate lunch is a term for a specific dish, two scoops of rice, a scoop of mac salad, and then a choice of protein. It's a very simple dish. It's a plentiful dish, and you know, we want to do that really, really well. And we've seen other major brands succeed with very simple menus. I know In-N-Out, for example, which, you know, we're on the West Coast, and so everyone in the West Coast knows about In-N-Out Burger, especially in California. And they have a very, very simple menu. And there's a lot of other great, really successful brands that have a simple menu. And we've just figured that, hey, it's going to be the easiest to operate, keeping it very, very simple, but doing it really, really well.
All for that. We've actually spent a lot of time talking about that on the show, and that if you can't be A+ at one or two things, you might not have any business doing items 3 through infinity. And you know, we've seen a lot of this. Like there's a restaurant here in Kansas City that just serves chicken tenders or something like that. And, you know, like, and just different things, and, you know, be really good at one thing, and people really dig that and definitely can respect that. Now, you know, as we mentioned, your company made it onto the Inc. 5000 this year. Congratulations again for that. And with that, that's a sign of a rapidly growing business. And for those of you that are just joining this episode, maybe didn't hear our other ones this year about Inc. 5000, that's a list that Inc.com or Inc. Magazine puts out of the 5,000 fastest growing privately held companies over the last 3 year period. And it is an indicator that you're growing quickly. And with that, that can be difficult to manage for a lot of people. And, you know, we're talking about creating a workplace where people want to work. That's challenging as well with a new rapidly growing business. You got culture issues to create, process, all of that. Like, I mean, how is that? I mean, what are you doing to create the workplace where people want to be?
Another, you know, thing for us that was important from the very beginning, you know, when you start in the restaurant industry at a young age and you've gone through, you know, there's some people that get into restaurant management later and they maybe haven't worked in a restaurant. And my brother and I had worked at all levels of a restaurant. We've, you know, rubbed elbows with crew members, managers, things like that. And you start to learn that the restaurant industry is a very demanding job. It can be very stressful, especially at the busier establishments. It's very stressful on crew. Sometimes you just have that feeling, you know, of working in a fast-paced restaurant of never being able to catch up. And that's just demanding on someone day in and day out. And so you learn that the restaurant industry is demanding, and that's why there's a lot of burnout in the restaurant industry. That's why there's a lot of turnover in the restaurant industry. And so even before the pandemic, when my brother and I kind of started to lay out the vision and the dreams for what Hawaiian Bros would be, we said, hey, we need a fun place that people want to work. We need to treat them well. We need to treat them respectfully, and we need to value their time. And that's one of the biggest things that we did with our management right away. It's not uncommon in the restaurant industry, you know, to have a manager, you pay him a salary based on 40 hours a week, but you demand 65 to 70 hours a week. And that's not something that we do. That's not something that we aim to do at all. We want to respect their time. We take the position that, hey, we do not own these employees. These are part of our team. They're part of our family. And we need to make sure that we are balancing or helping them balance their life outside of work. And so that's one of the first things we did, is say, hey, we need to create a system and a culture where we value your time. Now, that doesn't mean there's not a week where someone has to put in extra time. I think we've all experienced that. But on the average, we're trying to create that environment. And then other simple things we've done. You know, let's have what I call win-win, win-win policies. You know, there's a lot of brands that might have a strict meal policy. That's not a battle I want to fight with our crew members. So we just said, hey, you're going to get free meals, you know, and if you want to give your meal to a family member, that's great too. We don't care. You know, we want to have fun uniforms, and, you know, we're not going to get super uptight about what you wear. You know, wear a Hawaiian Bros shirt and a hat, and pretty much we don't care what else you wear, you know, as long as it's appropriate. And so, you know, we've set up a lot of what we call win-win policies that make the environment easier for the employees to live in and have fun in. You know, another thing that we do that we always talk about is each one of our stores has its own TikTok page run by the employees. We actually encourage the employees to make TikToks during the slower times. They make all sorts of fun TikToks in the restaurants. And what ends up happening is a lot of their friends and customers end up following, and it's actually become a recruiting tool, because friends see their friends working at Hawaiian Bros and say, hey, this company has fun uniforms. They have lax policies for the most part, and they're making TikToks when it's fun. It's good food, that kind of stuff. They want to come work for us. And so during this time, we haven't had a huge problem in hiring people. And we attribute a lot of that to the culture. And it doesn't start, I mean, it might start with me and my brother, but it's so many people carrying that torch now.
Yeah, I think so much about running a business and you know, you talk about recruitment, and, you know, here I am, I'm on year four, and we had to find 300 people that were all qualified to do really tough stuff. And, you know, part of it is, and I've been real adamant about that myself, is, you know, this needs to be a fun place to work. Like, it can't suck to work here. If it sucks to work here, no one's going to want to work here. And part of our recruitment and our growth, so it's just so you know, like, I have to typically have 30 applicants to find one that we want to give a job offer to. And, you know, it's highly technical, and there's a lot of things that we look for, but with that, our employees are our best recruiters as well. And, you know, they know other people that are good at what they do and have an idea of that. And I just think you don't get any of that if it sucks to work at your company. So, you know, you talk about like the value of time, big advocate there. I totally buy into that. And then, you know, for us, it's also like, we're going to pay you well, you know, cause that's one thing that's pretty much the real reason that most people go work somewhere else, is they have a better opportunity or the place they work at sucks. So, you know, I think a lot of that's easy to say and easy to do when it comes to like the fun part and the, like, well, let's talk about recruiting for a second. So like, so you mentioned TikTok, and I want to point out that you built this and got all this growth during a pandemic at a time when your competition was failing. I mean, how did you navigate that?
Yeah, it wasn't easy at times during the pandemic, and we're still experiencing some of the after effects of it, you know, with the inflation and things like that. But what we were very well positioned to do during the pandemic was to pivot to drive-through, curbside pickup delivery. We were doing a lot of that before, but a lot of those brands that had that emphasis and focus during the pandemic actually saw their sales increase because dine-in and you know, that kind of stuff was either not allowed or people were, you know, hesitant to go do that. So we just bought in even more to those channels. And so drive-through, for example, almost all our locations have a drive-through, and that's 55 to 60% of our business is in the drive-through. One of the things that we do is we boast of very, very fast drive-through times. We actually have, you know, we actually have monitors in the ground that measure how often cars are moving. And that's actually one of our managers' bonus metrics is the drive-through times that they're running. And so, you know, we are trying to keep cars moving every 30 seconds in the drive-through. So we call it a window time, 30-second window time. We've had stores in some really busy hours hit 22 to 25-second window times. And so, you know, you do that in a pandemic or just in general, people want to come back because if you're consistently fast, they can rely on you. They know what they're going to get. If the food is consistent and the service is consistent and the speed is consistent, then people want to come back. We changed our curbside model to where you don't have to come in the store. You can just park and we have people out there watching you pull in. We're like, hey, who's this order for? Someone else is running it out. We get you in and out of the parking lot quick. And we do the same thing with the delivery drivers. The delivery drivers don't have to come in, you know, the Uber Eats, DoorDash, Grubhub, they don't have to come into the store. It's kind of our motto. If you're not going to dine in with us, then there's really no reason for you to be in the store. Let us do all the work. You stay in your car and we'll take care of it for you. And so we've just become very, very fast. And, you know, so all that off-premise, all those off-premise channels kind of amount to 80% of our business, and 20% is dine in, which might seem kind of low, but at our average unit volumes, 20% is still a very healthy dine in business as well. And we get rid of kind of the clutter of people coming in and placing orders to go inside by having robust curbside and delivery. And so, you know, that was very optimized for the customer during the pandemic. And, you know, and on top of that, like I said, employees have desired to work for us and love our culture and love, just love the business in general. And that was a recipe for success in the pandemic.
So everything you mentioned, you know, the fast paced culture, with that, do you look for a certain type of person when you're doing interviews? Because I think a lot of people, well, they're just not fast-paced people.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, at the crew level, it's hard at the crew level to get to get that technical on what you're looking for. Certainly, when you start getting into management, we do some. Personality type surveys that we really, really believe in. And that that is a huge component of who we hire at management levels, because there's nothing worse than a great person in the wrong job, right? That, you know, you can have a great person, but they're in the wrong job and it just doesn't work out no matter how great a person they are. And so we want to find great people that are the right fit for the job that they're going to be doing. And we have a bunch of different jobs that require different personality types and all that. So we do believe in that. At the crew level, the recruiting kind of takes care of itself. We get a lot of referrals. A lot of employees are bringing their friends in, which we embrace. We embrace that. Some other brands might not embrace friends and family as much. We totally embrace people's friends and family coming to work for us. And, you know, it's worked for us so far. And it's not that there's never an issue, but the pros have way outweighed the cons on that. And so, you know, also, not everyone has to be fast paced, because we have optimized our kitchen significantly over the last few years to where you don't have to necessarily be working, you know, at a manic pace to work efficiently. And that has to do with some of the optimizations and things we did. We like to say we compare our kitchen kind of like a tachometer on a car. You know, yeah, you could rev this car up to the 10 and it's going to sound really loud and you're putting a lot of stress on it. Well, we've built our kitchens to handle that kind of volume, but then we're usually just kind of cruising at a 3. And so when people get off our shifts, it might've been really, really busy, but doesn't feel like it to them. They're going home not dog tired and they're you know, they're ready for work the next day.
Yeah, I'm one of those. I'd rather be busy than not. That's how you end up feeling like you were there every day. Now, one of the things that at my business that I've tried to tried to do is have programs that, you know, we have a full-time employee engagement person and try to do a lot of stuff. So by nature of my business, we build teams of programmers for tech companies. So the problem we have with that is with, you know, just under 50 clients that we staff teams for in perpetuity, we've got, you know, 4 dozen different cultures to adapt to, meaning work cultures, methods, and it's our job to adapt to what our client does, not the other way around, because we don't want you to have to change a whole bunch of stuff to do business with us. So when it comes to like programs, I mean, what do you think, like, what do you do, or what are some tips that you could give for creating them? When I say programs, I say employee engagement. So every quarter we provide a budget for and coordinate events that team bonding events. And our employees are in the Philippines. So I get the pictures and I'm like, man, I wish I was on that. They're like, you know, hiking through the jungle or scuba diving or doing something like that. And it's an attempt to get them to spend some time together outside of work and then also like have fun at work. I mean, that's a big hit both with our clients and our employees. What kind of tips or stuff do you do?
Yeah, it's going to be different for every workplace culture. It's going to be different for every brand. But some of the fundamentals probably are the same. You know, we are big on team bonding, and that can happen at all different levels. You know, obviously right now with 32 stores, I can't go to every store's, you know, store event that they do. But they're happening, you know, we have a budget for that kind of stuff. And we have, you know, we call them our 4-store restaurants. You're either an in-store, you know, staff member, or you're a 4-store staff member. So anyone who's, for the store, you know, that's kind of, that's a whole different group of people. And they often have their own events and circles of friends within the company that they're doing stuff with. They also are in, you know, engaging with people at the store as well. And so, you know, we believe in that greatly. And we try to create spaces where that will happen, and where the bonding can happen, because there's work never feels like work when you're having fun. And when you enjoy the people that you work around, and when you know the people that you work around, you care about them. It doesn't feel like work as much. And so, we believe in it. So I don't have any specific advice for brands other than, you know, you got to figure out what works for you, but don't devalue the importance of that. You know, team morale, team bonding, workplace culture, those are the things that I think separate, you know, great brands from, you know, from good brands.
Yeah, we do a couple other things. I mentioned like employee engagement, and that's been something that during the pandemic, because, you know, we went from having people that came to this very sophisticated office and a high-tech IT park in Cebu City in the Philippines, which most people haven't heard of, the second biggest city in the Philippines. And then all of a sudden, you know, where you have this like social interaction and mentorship and all these things. And, you know, we gave you a free meal and then all of a sudden, boom, we're all at home, locked in a room. You know, and with that, there was concerns that came up. And, you know, part of our employee engagement and also HR process was literally just making sure people were doing okay. And, you know, that's been a challenge because we stayed remote. So we're not changing that. And so we've had to make a lot of adjustments and creations to just make sure people are doing okay. Because some of the feedback we got from people is, you know, I mean, that can be a real lonely existence. And we want to make sure that first off, like, are you okay? And I think it's okay to ask your employees that, because I find that when you ask people that and they're not, they will usually tell you.
Yeah, that's a good point. We actually were remote before the pandemic as a strategy, at least for our, you know, for our 4-store employees. We have embraced that. We have found that people like the flexibility. Obviously, if you're in the store, you got to be in the store. But we have embraced that, and it's worked really well for us. We meet up all the time. You know, we travel. we travel when we need to meet up, and, you know, we'll meet at one of our markets, and we'll have the in-person meetings that we need to have, or board meetings, or strategy meetings, and we'll do that. And of course, we're leveraging technologies by Zoom. And we're aware that there's a con to the remote culture as well. There's less personal one-on-one engagement. There's less face-to-face engagement. So we try to make it really special when we do get the face-to-face engagement. When we do have a strategy meeting that we're in person for, instead of Zoom, we try to make that special and have other, other events going on that promote, that team bonding.
Well, speaking of promotion, it feels like a good time to remind everyone that finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. And still in the spirit of promotion, you mentioned 32 stores. Those aren't just here in Kansas City.
Yeah, we started in Kansas City. Our first few were in Kansas City, and we have about 10 or so in Kansas City now. We have them in Dallas as our next market, and then Austin. There's a few in Austin. We just opened in Houston. Just opened in San Antonio, in Oklahoma City. So yeah, we're kind of all up and down the Midwest. Got two ghost kitchens in Chicago. So yeah, we're very much in the Midwest right now. Started in Kansas City and still expanding there, but definitely expanding elsewhere as well.
A little off the topic here, but what kind of, I feel if with everyone not, okay, when I think that prior to my recent trip to Hawaii, if you said name Hawaiian food, I would have been like a luau, which isn't a kind of food. Right? Yeah. Obviously. Do you have to kind of go through any kind of education process or adoption, or like, how do you get people in Dallas or Houston or Oklahoma City or Kansas City, where, by the way, it's all like barbecue, 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 if you weren't aware, but how did you go about educating people what Hawaiian Bros even served?
Yeah, I am aware. I love the Kansas City barbecue, and Dallas has great food as well. But there's kind of an education process, but I think people were pretty curious. They were curious to try it. And, one of the things we do when we are gearing up to open a new store is one of our biggest marketing ploys is we just do a few days the weekend before we open of free food. We tend to theme it around like a select group of people, like teachers or military, first responders, that kind of thing. And we try to market to them, and it's kind of a training opportunity for our new staff. And it's a marketing opportunity just to give away free food. What happens is just the general public sees cars and whatnot, and they think we're open. So they come in and they find out that it's free. And, we do thousands of people in that 3-day span. And so there's already a built-in education with that. And they tell people about it. They appreciate the free meal, so they're likely to come back once we open and support us, by paying for a meal. And so we get off to a really good start that way. So there's always some education process, but I think curiosity, people want to try it, and people see the long, they see the lines, they see other people trying it, and they want to do it. So there has been some education, but word of mouth has a lot of power as well.
You've done a great job of that here locally, because just generating hype. And because I remember someone was saying something, I can't remember, social media or something, was excited that Hawaiian Brothers had opened the place that is near my home, which that's your Overland Park store, which, by the way, I want to point out that was a Burger King before. And I quit going there because every time I had gone there, I was like, this is so slow. This shouldn't be called fast food. And like, that's the kind of proving your point with the order to window time. And I was just like, I just quit going there. It's just like, man, this is bad. It took forever. I'm like, does it really take this long to do this? And said that the last time I went there, it had been a while. So when I saw it, you rebuilt it, rebranded it, and refreshed that location, I was like, all right, here we go. So, all right. So, but, obviously we've been talking about rapidly growing businesses. We've been talking about workplace culture and stuff like that. In general, what's been the hardest part about being a founder and leader at a rapidly growing business?
Yeah, the hardest part, I'd say, is that when you grow as fast as we've grown, every department within the organization has to scale appropriately, or you're going to get hiccups. And we've had some hiccups, we'll be the first ones to admit that. But, we've got multiple different departments. We've got development, we've got finance, We've got marketing, we've got people, you know, there's operations. And so you have these various IT, you have these various different departments, and it's not just opening 32 stores. It's building the infrastructure in each one of those departments to scale with the brand and to be able to support the brand, because each one of those departments supports a store in a unique way. And you can't properly operate the store if they're not supported properly. And so we've made some mistakes for sure. And we've had to play catch up, you know, on some of those departments. Just, you know, we didn't staff them quick enough. It's when you're going to grow fast, you have to be staffing ahead, not behind. You know, you have to, your growth spending and things like that. And so I would say that's been the hardest part. That's been the biggest learning curve for me personally. This business is way larger than anything I've ever been a part of before, or into, certainly in terms of managing. And so, you know, there is some learn on the fly stuff. We brought in a team of great advisors and industry experts as well, who are really helpful in so many ways, much, much more qualified and smarter than myself. And so, but yeah, scaling the entire restaurant was the hardest challenge and still is the hardest challenge.
I really want everyone to take note of the hiring ahead of growth, and that, man, you want to talk about that being a challenge. So with the majority of our company existing in the Philippines, so dude, the average, so when you quit a job there, you give 30 to 60 days notice, which means it's not like, you know, the US, you got like this 2 week window or something. And it's like, oh man. We got to think like quarters and all this time in advance. And then also on some levels, I'm not going to compare all restaurants the same, but a lot of people have food service experience. If your business does something niche or special, or like just something that it's hard to find people that come with any type of experience, I think you have to think even further in advance, because you're going to have to train them, get them up to speed, get them to do a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, I think you're right about that. And if you're wrong, and you're right, one single department can drag it all down. I recently gave a fireside chat about how to scale sales at a rapidly growing business. And before I even got into any of that, the question was, are you even ready to scale? If your business got 10 times bigger, because the definition of scale is to basically change on demand without having to have massive, you know, like disruption in what you're doing. And that's why software companies have a little easier time if done right, because you can dial the server up a little more and handle that. It's a little different when it comes to businesses that rely on people working at them are inherently almost unscalable by that definition, because you got to find more people to do more things. You got to train them. You got to wait for them to start. You got to replace people that leave. And you know, if you're not ready for that. For us, one of the issues that we've had, we grew so quickly that often we found ourselves having a waiting list of people that were waiting for our services or service providers. And I've had a bunch of people like, oh, that's a good problem to have. No, it's not. It's terrible. It sucks. Because as the business owner, I'm sitting here going, it's like all this unrealized opportunity and revenue and profit and all of it. And it, I tell you, it's a terrible feeling. It's not a good thing. Yeah. And have you had any of that with, like, I mean, I'm sure if you, with 32 stores, you're probably like 64, 128, 256, but you got to do them one at a time.
Yeah, exactly. There's a one at a time, but at the same time, building the systems to handle more than one at a time. And, you know, one of the ways we've done that is it's not just hiring people within, it's hiring expert, you know, professional services, you know, consultants, fractional employees, you know, people that can be experts in a certain field, and almost we treat them like family. We treat them like they're, you know, part of us, but they're not employees. And that's another way we've bridged the gap in scale.
Let's talk about consultants and fractional employees, because, you know, the fractional employee, that's a term that I feel like has really become in vogue in like the last 5 years. But by nature, consultants, attorneys, accountants are often all fractional. My dad was an attorney and he didn't just have one client. So he was a fractional attorney, yeah, essentially. Now with that, when I was younger as an entrepreneur, I was a lot more resistant to that. And I would, you're like, oh my God, I'm not paying that person $500 an hour. And then I realized, I'm like, you're not paying for that hour. You're paying for the lifetime of opportunity and experience that occurred in front of it. And I've yeah, truly taken like a 180 in that regard. I hire consultants and stuff like that all the time. What's some advice you could give to other entrepreneurs or people that want to be when it comes to figuring out who can give you good input and who couldn't? Because by the way, I've had some good ones and had some bad ones too.
Yeah, it's a balance, right? We have a number of great, qualified, smart employees that have a certain experience set. But then, there's another group of people out there in the consulting world that they have a skill set and experience that you might not be able to have in-house. And it's just utilizing them and finding the balance to work alongside our team. So far, I feel like we've managed it really well. And like I said, we treat those consultants and the fractionals, like they're part of us. So if we do have some sort of event, we often invite them, as if they're part of us. But I think the biggest thing is that if you're going to scale and you're going to do something that takes a high level of precision, you can't settle for not having experts in certain areas. And so we have just taken that thing is that we've taken the stance that we want to have experts. And so oftentimes that comes in the form of a consultant who has helped another business implement what we're trying to implement or things like that. And so, that's how we've managed it. And it's worked out really well for us. And I think, our employees love the benefit that we get from the consultants and the professional services that we are utilizing.
When it comes to consulting, and before I was an entrepreneur, worked semi-corporate stuff. And I mean, it wasn't uncommon for one of the companies I worked for to hire 10 consultants. So they had 10 opinions, hoping to pick the best one, or the best course of action. So with that, but some people look at that defines corporate waste. It doesn't. I mean, you're basically crowdsourcing some good ideas there. And I think one of the things that you mentioned, the expertise, that's great. Now, for those of you that are early stage in your business, fractional access also means fractional expenses. And then these expenses are, if you hire a full-time person, there's a different level of commitment and responsibility and liability that comes if you have to let that person go or anything else. And so there is a safety net with that. On the downside of the consultant and fractional side of things, I am a firm believer that problems are usually best solved by people that wake up as a business owner wanting to solve your problems, meaning like, so keep in mind when you do hire fractional people or consultants, in most cases, if they're working with more people than just you, you don't have all of the attention, but that's also why you don't have all of the expense that goes with it. For us, we've hired sales, marketing consultants primarily is what we've looked at. Attorneys are by nature, we've had fractional CFOs. I mean, what are some of the fractional or consulting services that are used in the restaurant industry?
Yeah, marketing. We have a few people on our team that are employees that are in the marketing department, but we utilize an agency and we utilize other resources out there that are marketing. So that would be an example of consultant or fractional. Supply chain is another example. Project management for us is something that we use. Legal for sure. We don't have any in-house counsel, Another thing is in accounting and finance, we use some fractional help there. We have an accounting service provider that does a lot of our book work. We still have people that are doing other accounting and finance functions that are in-house, but we do outsource some of that stuff. So, and there's other things too. There's other things that we outsource as well to these fractional employees and consultants and professionals and whatnot. But it's all about them working in tandem with our team.
Once again, Cameron McNee, co-founder and co-CEO of Hawaiian Bros Island Grill. About to end this episode of the show. I like to end my episodes with what I call the founder's freestyle, where we can review the stuff we talked about or maybe what we forgot to talk about. And before we get to that, if you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders, FullScale can help. We have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. Go to fullscale.io. It takes like 2 minutes to fill out the questions, and our platform's going to match you up with people that are passionate about solving the problems that you have. And at FullScale, we specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you, much like Hawaiian Bros. We were on the Inc. 5000 this year. Bro, we got to keep up with you. We're only at 878, so we're going to have some work to do with that. I mentioned the founder's freestyle. I like to hand the mic over to the guests and take a turn myself to kind of look back at the conversation and either highlight something that stood out in the conversation. And oftentimes, you know, here we are, I think my number one comment all these episodes later is, wow, that went pretty fast. So I don't know if there's anything you forgot to say, plug anything. It's your freestyle. I've had people rap, sing, do free form poetry, none of which is required.
Yeah. I'm probably not going to do any of that. I appreciate you having me on. I think I got to say a little bit about the brand. We're excited to where we're going as a brand, and we're excited about the culture that we have in the company. And I think that is honestly what makes me get up in the morning and what I'm most excited about. The P&L, of course, that means something, but I deal in terms of people, and I want to provide an atmosphere and a culture where people are happy and they're engaged. And we're trying to do our best. We're not without our own failures and faults, like any business. But that's what we strive to be. We have core values as a company that guide us quite a bit, and we want to be that business, and we want to be one of the restaurants. I think there's some others as well, that are trying to kind of change the tide of the historic reputation of restaurants, being a burnout scenario. And we don't want to do that. Not perfect, but that's our aim.
Yeah, I'm going to parlay off that for my freestyle and say that, want to re-highlight, have a place that doesn't suck to work. I think that can be like rule one, because if it sucks to work at your place, you're not going to keep people and you're not going to get them to come in, because it's just that shit doesn't stay a secret. That's a key thing. I think another thing goes with having a place that doesn't suck to work at is go find experts. That you mentioned that I've leaned on that in there are people that know how to do and have done most of the stuff of what you're looking to do. Pay them to come tell you, and you can accelerate your growth, your education, all of that process by finding people that are experts. There's a ton of them out there, so don't tell yourself that there aren't. With that, another thing is I love the free meal thing. Like, let people participate in what you do and own it. Cause like when I go to a restaurant, I literally ask your drive through. I said, what do you like here? And they told me,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, that's it. And I'm that guy. Cause I want to know what the people at the restaurant want to eat and what they don't. And you're not going to get it. Now, what I don't like is when I go somewhere like, well, I haven't really tried a lot of the stuff here. And I'm like, and I'm thinking, why would I then? Then give me a water, give me a water and my check. So,
yeah, exactly.
Well, man, thanks again for joining me. And thanks for helping us and the other entrepreneurs of Kansas City represent the Inc. 5000 the way that we could and should have.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by FullScale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.